What you are about to hear is the story of a connection that was made between a television series and a viewer's life. Our television set sits in the corner of our living room, befriending us, educating us, inspiring us, making us laugh or cry or tear our hair out in frustration. It is a far more constant companion than most of the friends we will ever make, or even our family. The You and Who books are the story of that companionship, that connection, as told by the people who watch the programmes that make us come alive, chiefly, of course, Doctor Who. This podcast will relate some of those stories. You're listening to You and Who Talking, and I'm J.R. Southall, the creator and chief editor of the series. Hi, I'm JR.
And I'm Rob.
And this week we have another longer essay, so we're here at the start of the podcast again because there's just going to be the one story on this. But before we get into that, I think we should give a call out for more people to send us their essays, eh, Rob?
I think so. If you've been listening to these episodes and liking what you've heard and want to get involved, whether you've written for You and Who or not, it's very important to say, even if you've never written for the books, you can still write your own essay and submit something here. We're open to both the published stuff in You and Who, stuff that's going to be published in You and Who, and stuff that has never been published in You and Who and never will be published in You and Who. You know, we're a very broad church here.
Absolutely right. I mean, the point of this podcast, other than obviously that it's a sort of a backdoor way to do a sort of audio book of the You and Who books, but the point of this podcast is just for people to listen to one another's Doctor Who stories and sort of listen to things that they recognise, even if not necessarily their fine detail is the same. But we all have universal stories as Doctor Who fans, and one of the successes of the You and Who books was that people would read the essays and think, yeah, I recognise that. Yeah, I did that. Yeah, that happened to a friend of mine. And all this kind of thing. So if you have any kind of a story that you think might be worth telling, that might be familiar to people, any kind of a story about something that's happened to you in the Doctor Who world, or how you became a fan, anything like that, write it down, read it out, send it in. And you don't even need a especially good microphone, because, you know, we've already put out readings that people have just recorded on the mobile phones.
Yeah,
you know, you send
right.
it, yeah, you send it to us, we'll send it through a few machines to make it sound better if it doesn't sound especially good. Yeah,
including the machine that goes ping. That's one for the Python fans out there. Yes, look, universal themes, and we've got one today in the form of an essay from the Our Sarah anthology that is yet to come out, so this is another exclusive.
That's right.
Paul Driscoll writing here about watching, obviously, Elizabeth Sladen on television and gaining confidence watching her on television as a kid, shedding buckets when she left the show, getting excited about her coming back in school reunion. It's all in here. And it's just like, oh, yeah, that's my experience. Oh, yeah, I did that. Oh, yeah, you know, and it's like, oh, I love these essays.
Yeah, exactly. It's lovely. And obviously, going back to what I was just saying, this is what people will recognise. This ostensibly is an essay about Genesis of the Daleks, but it takes in so much more, and people will recognise so much more of what he's talking about. That's the lovely thing about this podcast. You get the people who actually wrote the essays telling their stories in their own voice so that we can experience what they experienced and how they experienced it, and at the same time, how that reflects back on us.
Exactly right. Shall we have a listen?
I think we should.
Hello, my name is Paul Driscoll, and I'd like to read for you a piece that I've written just yesterday, actually, for the forthcoming You and Who book, celebrating the wonderful Liz Sladen and her incredible role as Sarah Jane Smith in You and Who's Our Sarah. Sarah, I Can Hardly Believe It, Genesis of the Daleks, by Paul Driscoll. I'd like to start by a little quote from the lady herself in an interview with Ben Cook for Doctor Who magazine. The first glimpse of Davros emerging from the smoke, that's the one I'll never forget, because it was a rare moment when everything seemed to collide to be real. The hair stood up on the back of your neck. I don't know anything that comes close. terrifying. That same terror, genuinely felt by the actress when she was first introduced to the hideously deformed scientist whilst filming Genesis, was there for all to see in her performance some 30 years later in Journey's End. Modern Doctor Who regularly treats its core fanbase with goosebump moments, deliberately scripted to evoke the days of yesteryear. As one of the most popular companions of all time, Sarah Jane's return is littered with them. An intoxicating wave of heady nostalgia hits us hard, from the moment Sarah accidentally tumbles upon the TARDIS in school reunion, to her poignant and perfectly pitched final words, "I've seen amazing things out there in space, but strange things can happen wherever you are. I've learned that life on Earth can be an adventure too. In all the universe, I never expected to find a family." But you know, for me, it's the scene in Journey's End where Sarah and Davros finally meet again that left the most indelible mark. That was our Sarah right there. Sladen had already conveyed fear more believably than the rest of the cast put together in that montage of the Doctor's friends simultaneously hearing the Dalek's transmission. All she can say in response is a disbelieving no. But now, face to face with their evil creator, she's courageous and defiant, driven to her resistance by her memories of Skaro, as she steps forward with an embittered Sarah Jane Smith. Remember? It's a tough combination to get right, but Sladen brilliantly exudes both fear and anger, especially when she emphasizes remember. Word is delivered with an emotional intensity that serves to expose the inappropriateness of Davros's glee upon seeing her for a second time. He finds it poetic that Sarah should be there to witness his ultimate triumph, since she was present at the Dalek's birth. But she warns him, "I've learned to fight since then." You know, it made sense that of all Sarah Jane's adventures with the Doctor, their ill-fated mission to stop the Daleks from ever being born should be the one that motivated her to defend the Earth from her attic in Bannerman Road. After all, if she had her way, the incubation chamber would have been destroyed. I was only 9 when I watched Genesis of the Daleks on transmission. Too young to fully appreciate the Nazi overtones of the story, or to take a view on the ethics of genetic engineering. It was for me largely a form of escapism, a story to be lost in, one step up from Noddy and Rupert Bear. But on a deeper level, Doctor Who helped me to feel more courageous in the face of real-world evils, such as the school bully, the threat of nuclear war, domestic abuse, and recurring nightmares. Perhaps naively, the show made me believe that the good will always overcome the bad in the end, and that I didn't have to conform to be a hero or to win friends. Doctor Who made a difference, beyond any shadow of doubt, and the importance of Sarah Jane Smith in making this dynamic work cannot be underestimated. You see, those were the days when the companion fulfilled the uncomplicated role of being the audience identification figure, and Sarah Jane very much put me in the story on an experiential level. She was the bridge that brought our two different universes together, and without her curiosity and the peril she faced as a result, I would never have gained the confidence to make the odd personal triumph in the face of adversity. While Sarah was imploring the dithering Doctor to go ahead and destroy the Daleks, I was telling Russell to stop letting the thugs kick his head in the school toilets just because he smelt. Suppose as an adult such an association sounds a little bit misplaced, even an inappropriate leap of logic, but for a 9-year-old boy it made perfect sense. If the adults weren't listening, or were encouraging us to man up or to see the wider picture and understand the bullies, then it was up to us kids to do something about it. In reality, most of the time I ran away. I fled the scene, leaving a real-life cliffhanger in my wake, hoping to God that it would work out for Russell in the end, but going home to replay the nightmare again and again. Life was also full of cliffhangers, not of my own making. Whenever I was told to go to my room while my parents were in the throes of a violent exchange, or whenever the school bullies threatened to do something unspeakable to me after the bell rang, like rip up my Star Wars collector's cards or put my shoes in the toilet. Back in those days, Doctor Who cliffhangers stayed with me like real and imagined unresolved nightmares, long after the threat had passed. Just a year or so later, I would start to predict what happened next, without angst or concern for the character's safety. Until about the age of 10, at least as far as the Doctor's companions were concerned, there was genuine jeopardy and a real fear that perhaps this time they wouldn't make it out alive. At times, my experiences of the programme verged on the neurotic, and cliffhangers involving Sarah Jane were by a country mile the chief culprits. It's probably why, of all the Doctor's companions, Sarah was the only one who really got under my skin. Call me heartless, but I didn't weep for Clara, Donna, Amy, or even for Rose. When Sarah left at the end of The Hand of Fear, I shed buckets. Those tears turned out to be a 28-year cliffhanger, until they started up again in Score Reunion, transformed into something beautiful and joyous. It's little wonder that Sarah's departure affected me so profoundly, took all those years to heal. The 70s was a time when I watched the show with a fear of endings to match the Doctor's own. After UNIT, the Brigadier and Harry had quietly disappeared, I knew that Sarah would one day stop travelling with the Doctor. But if truth be told, it was a terrible week in 1978 when I thought we'd lost her already. Second episode of Genesis of the Dalek ends with a freeze frame of Sarah falling from the gantry of the Thal rocket silo. I was convinced she was going to die. In fact, I was in such a state about it that this particular scene blended into an existing nightmare. Sarah Jane had come to join me night after night as I tumbled down the same bottomless pit. She couldn't save me because she was falling too. Close by, but just out of reach. Back in those days, we didn't have the luxury of video recorders to replay the previous week's episodes, or to check certain facts. Probably why the writers thought they could get away with calling our bluff. These days they have to go all timey-wimey on us instead. But when part three showed Sarah landing on a nearby platform, I knew we'd been cheated. The spell of Doctor Who was broken, and I could no longer suspend my disbelief. It was a watershed moment in my personal journey with the show. The end of the age of blissful ignorance. A big deal, just like not believing in Santa anymore. I distinctly remember feeling violated by the writers. They tricked me, played with my emotions, and left me needlessly traumatized for a whole week. And what's more, those nightmares didn't go away, even after I'd seen the rewritten ending. Thankfully, the experience might have left something of a bad taste in my mouth, but it didn't in any way sully my appreciation of Sarah Jane. I can only put that down to the brilliance of Elizabeth Sladen's performance. At first, all I could think about was, you shouldn't still be alive. But all it took was a couple of scenes for me to bury that nagging thought to the back of my mind. It was comforting to know that the Doctor had just been through a similar experience, thinking that Sarah and Jane were still inside the Khalid Dome when it exploded. You know, his joy on seeing them alive again was how I ought to have been feeling. He was saying, Sarah, I can hardly believe it. Just like I had been. But in the Doctor's case, it was for all the right reasons. Sarah was back. It may have been an impossible escape, but once again I could laugh and cry with her. And laugh I did, a few minutes later, when after an unfortunate encounter with a hungry giant clam, she quips, I'll never eat oysters again. Sarah Jane will always be at or near the top of any list of favourite companions, even though the character was largely wasted until her triumphant return under Russell T. Davis. That sassiness so evident in her initial stories had been increasingly watered down during the Hinchcliffe Holmes years, to such an extent that we could have been forgiven forgetting that she was an investigative journalist. But there was one consistent feature of Sarah, a quality that made her so endearing and kept her very much in the Joe Grant mind. Sarah was always rooting for the outsider and the misunderstood. Whether it was by standing up for those who might otherwise seem unimportant, or by her refusal to judge from appearances. I think this is why she felt like an ally and a friend, or the big sister I'd always yearned for. I already picked up on Sarah's kindness when she befriended the K-1 robot in Tom Baker's opening story, Robot. But the friendship Sarah forged with the Muto Severin in Genesis made even more of an impression. Hated and mistreated by Khaleds and Thals alike, the Mutos were the biggest victims of the thousand-year war between the two feuding races. And in my own small way, with my albeit limited and egocentric worldview, I identified with that fact, that wherever the Mutos went, they didn't fit in, not unless they could be treated like slaves. It would ultimately cost some of them their lives, but when Sarah spearheaded a revolt, I was absolutely rooting for her. And I'd completely forgotten my initial disappointment that I'd not seen many Daleks in this story. Genesis of the Daleks has always been the Sarah Jane story I remember best. The one that defined her in my imagination. Partly for that cliffhanger. Partly for her act of selfless revolt. But I was also a proud owner of the abridged BBC audio adaptation on LP. It was the only Doctor Who story I had on demand as a child, and I would endlessly replay the adventure long after Sarah Jane had left the TARDIS. As a result, Elizabeth Sladen's voice remained the most familiar aspect of her character, and I wondered whether my imagination had taken the story to places it never truly went visually. It was then a joy to watch Genesis again as part of the 1982 Doctor Who and the Monsters run, to discover that my memories had remained largely unaltered, perhaps because of that LP. How wonderful it is, truly, to be able to return to those adventures now on DVD, time and again, and to remember the unsurpassable Sarah Jane Smith. I'm happy to report that I grew out of those horrible recurring nightmares, years ago in fact, but I'm even happier to say that I've never felt too old for Doctor Who, or too old for that big sister I never had. A tear, Sarah Jane. Oh yes. Yes, indeed. For the You and Who book, R. Sarah.
You've been listening to You and Who Talking, presented by Rob Irwin with J.R. Southall. The You and Who books, from which all royalties are paid to charity, are available in print and for Kindle from watchingbooks.weebly.com.